In Lystra, there sat a man crippled in his feet, who was lame from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul as he was speaking. Paul looked directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed, and called out, "Stand up on your feet." At that, the man jumped up and began to walk. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they shouted in the Lycaonian language, "The gods have come down to us in human form." Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul they called Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. The priest of Zeus, whose temple was just outside the city, brought bulls and wreaths to the city gates, because he and the crowd wanted to offer sacrifices to them. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of this, they tore their clothes and rushed out into the crowd, shouting, "Men, why are you doing this? We too are only men, human like you. We are bringing you good news, telling you to turn from these worthless things to the living God who made heaven and earth and sea and everything in them. In the past, he let all nations go their own way. Yet he has not left himself without testimony. He has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy." Even with these words, they had difficulty keeping the crowd from sacrificing to them. Then some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. But after the disciples had gathered round him, he got up and went back into the city. The next day, he and Barnabas left for Derbe.
Now, I've called this talk a message for pagans, but I guess very few of us will think of ourselves as pagans. When I say the word pagan, maybe you think of people with painted green faces and going to Stonehenge during the summer solstice or whatever. But I hope we're going to see that pagan actually describes our culture today remarkably well. You see, pagan is anyone who wouldn't say that there's one God who rules the whole world. That's what I'm meaning when I say pagan this lunchtime. Anyone who wouldn't agree that there's one God who rules the whole world. When we believe that there is a God who rules the whole world, well, we get into questions of how we get right with him, how we get to know him, questions of religion and rules and rituals and so on. And we were dealing with those last week, and the talk is on the website, if that's of interest to you. But when we don't believe that there's one God who rules the whole world, well, then we get into questions like this. We start to say things like, "I don't believe in organized religion. I'm very spiritual, but I don't go to church. No one's going to tell me what to believe." I wonder whether you would say any of those sorts of things. Even if you don't, I'm sure you've got friends and colleagues who would say those sorts of things. And I wonder how you would answer them. These were the sort of people that Paul and Barnabas met at Lystra as they continued their journey through modern-day Turkey with the brand new Christian message. And as we look at their encounter with the pagans at Lystra, we'll see three things that set this new Christianity apart from paganism. And the first thing is this: Christianity explains the supernatural. Christianity explains the supernatural. You see, paganism tries to make sense of the world without reference to one God who rules the world. So imagine that this building, the Cuban Bar basement restaurant, is the world, and we don't know anything about the world outside. This is a closed universe. For some of us, it'll be our idea of heaven. For others, it'll be our idea of, well, you get the picture. Now, if we try to make sense of the Cuban basement restaurant without reference to a God who made it and who stands beyond it and is bigger than it, then we'd have no framework, would we, to explain miracles or the supernatural. We have no means of integrating the natural, observable things that we could see and touch, and the supernatural things that go on. We can see that in this episode here with Paul and Barnabas. So look down at the sheets again, and you'll see that when Paul and Barnabas arrive in the city of Lystra, Paul performed a healing miracle. It's recorded in the first few verses there on your sheet. The man is sitting there, crippled in his feet, lame from birth. He had never walked. The descriptions of his problem are piled up, aren't they? And yet every specific is reversed in the miracle. Did you notice that as Ian read it to us? He goes from sitting to standing. He goes from crippled in his feet to standing on his feet. He goes from lame to jumping up. He goes from never having walked to walking. Every specific is reversed in this powerful miracle. And it's very impressive, isn't it? It helps to confirm that God's saving and healing power isn't confined just to his original people, the Jewish people. It's being displayed far from Jerusalem and the Jewish heartland among people who are far from Judaism. It's an impressive miracle. And yet the crowd's reaction still feels a bit extreme, doesn't it? Do you see what they did? Verse 11, when the crowd saw what Paul had done, they shouted in the Lycaonian language, "The gods have come down to us in human form." Now the person who doesn't believe in one God who rules the whole world will either try to deny the supernatural, or, as we see here, they'll be obsessed with it. And that's true of people today, isn't it? We're obsessed in our culture today with the supernatural. Then we love it, don't we? Our culture's gullible fascination with astrology and with the unexplained and with the search for a higher force only seems to increase. So about 5 years ago, we got a little card through our door from a Mr. Seiler, who was a clairvoyant, and he claims to be an internationally renowned healer and advisor. Recently, in the last few weeks, we got another card through the door from the same man. Mr. Seiler is still going and active in E14. Except this time, the card was a little bit bigger and a little bit more expensively produced. Obviously, the clairvoyant business is doing well in the recession. But it's not just the wacky fringe that's obsessed with the supernatural, is it? And many of us want to believe that the latest miracle diets and miracle cures really are going to work. And we're going to have to admit too, aren't we, that our churches are often infected with the pagan supernaturalism of the culture around us. But as Christians, we should be delighted, but not surprised, when we see miracles and hear of miracles. They aren't surprising to us because we know that this world isn't all there is. There is a God who's bigger than this world, and if he made what we call the laws of nature, we shouldn't be surprised if sometimes he goes beyond the laws of nature. Miracles in the Bible are frequent, but they're always done for a reason. They're meant to cause us to listen to the God who is bigger than nature. We can see that just a few verses before our reading. If you've got your own Bible with you, just look back a few verses earlier in Acts 14, and in verse 3 we see that Paul and Barnabas spent a considerable time in Iconium speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to do miraculous signs and wonders. You see, we're meant to respond to the miraculous signs and wonders by listening to the message of God's grace. The message about the God who's bigger than the observable universe and who rules over nature. God testified to his message through Barnabas and Paul, through supernatural signs. But even after, when there aren't miracles, what are we told in verse 17? It's on your handouts, verse 17. Even where there aren't miracles, God has not left himself without testimony. He has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy. In other words, the supernatural and the natural are consistent. They both show that there's a good God who made the world and gives us good things. So let's not get excited or so excited by looking for the supernatural that we ignore the natural testimony of the world around us. The very fact that we had jobs to come to this morning and that we've got full bellies is evidence enough that there is a good God who made the world and provides for all our needs. Christianity is different from paganism in that it explains the supernatural. The second way that it's different is in this: it relativizes created things. Christianity relativizes created things. Let me explain to you what I mean by that. When the pagans see the miracle, they come to worship Paul and Barnabas as gods, don't they? They come to worship Paul and Barnabas as gods. And we see the missionaries' response to that in verses 14 and 15. When the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of this, they tore their clothes and rushed out into the crowd, shouting, "Men, why are you doing this? We too are only men, human like you. We're bringing you good news, telling you to turn from these worthless things to the living God who made heaven and earth and sea and everything in them." When they refer to the pagan temple sacrifices as worthless things, they're using the word that's used throughout the Bible for empty things, for idols. The pagans of Lystra might well have had little carved idols of their gods in wood or in stone. The sorts of things that are mocked elsewhere in the Bible for being unable to move or speak or to do anything for the people who made them. Do you see how ridiculous it is to think that we can worship things that are made by human hands, worshipping them as gods, when they're made by us in the first place? Most of us can't imagine worshipping man-made things in this day and age. Or can we? Or can we? Isn't the greatest religion of our age materialism? That is a worship of material things. The clue is in the name. Created things. We worship something when we make it ultimate, when we desire it and live for it beyond everything else. And you can tell what a culture worships by what it spends its best money on and invests its best resources in. In times past in this country, the most richly gilded buildings would have been what? Royal palaces and churches and cathedrals. Today, what are our most impressively marbled and gilded buildings? Headquarters of international banks and law firms and shopping malls. Temples to materialism, aren't they? The pursuit of created things. Maybe the desire, the pursuit, is for money and material things for their own sake. Often it's for what that money will buy. So a couple of weeks ago I was coming in early for the prayer meeting in Moorgate, and even before 8 o'clock in the morning, there were long queues outside the mobile phone shops for the latest iPhone, the iPhone 4. I'm not going to answer a show of hands to who got one on the first day that they're available. But some of us will get up early to pray to the Creator God, and some of us will get up early to queue for something created. Maybe like the pagans in Lystra, our desire is directed not at material things, things made by human hands, but at our bodies, at people. Maybe it's the longing to have the perfect body ourselves, whether by going through the gym or through the surgeon's knife or the injection of Botox or whatever it is. Or maybe we're obsessed with the bodies of others. Our culture's obsession both with celebrity and with pornography are signs of a pagan worship of created things. Maybe our desire is for the intangible things that are no less created. Maybe a worship of status or respect worship of fame. Our pursuit of career is often about our worth in the eyes of others, isn't it? We might describe our culture as post-Christian, but as someone once said, when people stop believing in God, they don't believe in nothing, they will believe in anything. Or in the context of today's talk, when people stop worshipping God, they don't worship nothing, they worship anything. If the Creator God is not ultimate in our hearts and minds and lives, we make something else ultimate. I wonder what that thing is for you. I wonder what it is for your friends and colleagues. We imagine ourselves to be much more sophisticated than the pagans of the first century. But I wonder if our paganism just comes in different packaging. And again, we have to admit, don't we, that our paganism can infect church life. I'm not just thinking about the type of church that promotes a prosperity gospel, where Christianity is just a different means to the same end of our culture of material health and wealth to enjoy today. I'm not just talking about that. I'm also thinking about our preoccupation with celebrity preachers and celebrity worship leaders. Or even closer to home for some of us, maybe, our brand loyalty that makes us think that our church or our circle of churches somehow brings us closer to God than other churches. Maybe we're more influenced by pagan ways of thinking than we care to admit. Worshipping created things is inevitable if we ignore the one who created them, the one who is bigger than this world. What did Paul and Barnabas say when the pagans want to worship them as gods? What do they say? It's down there in verse 15. They say, "Men, why are you doing this? We too are only men, human like you. We are bringing you good news, telling you to turn from these worthless things to the living God who made heaven and earth and sea and everything in them." The Christian message is that there is one God who made everything else. Think of how universal that claim is. He's the living God who made heaven and earth and sea and everything in them. Is there anything that's not included there? I don't think so. Created things are good. They show us signs of their good creator. But he is the one we should be worshipping. In our neo-pagan age, we need to rediscover the one God who made the whole world. We mustn't let neo-Darwinists, people like Richard Dawkins and his mates, we mustn't let them take away from us the idea that there's one creator, God. Whether we believe in an old earth or a young earth, a literal or symbolic 6 days, the one God who made everything is the foundation of our message to pagans. And if I'm right that our culture is increasingly pagan, then we're going to have to talk more and more about the one God who made the whole world. Realizing that there's one living creator God gives us perspective on the many created things that were made by him for our good. Our iPhones, our jobs, our bodies, they're all good things, but they're not ultimate. They remind us of the good creator God who is ultimate. And realizing that there's one living God relativizes our relationships with one another, doesn't it? We're all human together, of great value, but not ultimate. So we won't worship others, and we won't seek the worship of others. The sort of formal religions we were looking at last week sometimes make God out to be so other, so distant, that we struggle to get to know him and struggle to know what he's like and get him to be pleased with us. we have no assured relationship often with the God of formal religion. But paganism makes the opposite mistake. Paganism doesn't know anything outside the observable world. So its gods are projections of created things. So Zeus and Hermes and the rest, who are referred to in the Greek context of this culture of the passage we're looking at, they are just very big men, projections of created things. And I'm afraid that pagan-influenced Christianity has a tendency to see God as just a very big man, our mate with influence, rather than the creator who defines reality and rules over us as creatures. When we find ourselves controlled by desire for created things, whether that's money, toys, respect, other people, let's remind ourselves that there is one living God who made those things and who alone is worthy of our worship. Christianity is radically different from paganism in one other thing too. Christianity brings stability and satisfaction and success. My dad told me the story once of a school friend of his who wanted a tungsten carbide pen. Now, if you don't know, tungsten carbide is just a very special sort of metal. And this school friend of my dad's went on and on about his tungsten carbide pen. He saved up his pocket money for it. He looked in the catalogue at it. He kept banging on about it for weeks, if not months. And finally, the day came. And 50-odd years later, my dad can still remember his friend coming to him and saying, "Look, I've got my tungsten carbide pen. And now I don't know what to do with it." Now, aren't we the same with the things that we long for, the things that we desire, the things that we worship? Aren't we the same? We devote ourselves to our career, and one day we realise that our career can vanish overnight. We pursue sexual satisfaction, but we're never really satisfied. We follow celebrities, only to see them topple. And so it's no surprise that Paul and Barnabas are first worshipped, so that they have difficulty in verse 18 from keeping the crowd from sacrificing to them. And then verse 19, did you hear the shock when Ian read it to us? Verse 19, then some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. We're meant to see, I think, just how fickle and unstable paganism is. One minute worshipping them as gods, the next minute leaving them for dead. That instability is inevitable if we invest expectations in creative things that those creative things cannot bear. Once we make something created ultimate, we are only going to be disappointed, and so we find ourselves flitting from one desire, one idol, to the next, as we look for the next thing that we think will satisfy. We need to know that those created things cannot bear that weight of expectation. We need to look at those good created things and think of the wonderful creative God who made them, who alone is worthy of our worship. It's a great blessing to realise that there's one living God who made the world. It means that our world isn't one of chaos, like the world of Greek mythology, where the various gods fight over creation. That chaos and confusion is inevitable if this world and the things in it and the things like it are all that there is. But the Christian conviction that there's one creator God under whom all of creation is put in perspective means that nothing created is ultimate. And we're able to relativize things. A paganism promises stability, satisfaction, and success. And it sees Christianity as risky as joyless, and frankly, let's admit it, for losers. But precisely the opposite is true. Paul's missionary journey probably looked pretty weak and pathetic. But just picture him dusting himself off outside the city walls of Lystra. Maybe the crowds that stoned him and dragged him there are still watching and jeering. It must have looked like the new Christian message had failed there, mustn't it? And yet in their short time in Lystra, Paul and Barnabas seem to have planted a church. We read in the second part of verse 21, just after the reading on your handout, that after they came back from Derbe, Paul and Barnabas returned to Lystra, Iconium and Antioch, strengthening the disciples and encouraging them to remain true to the faith. Paul came a little while later to Lystra for a third time, and he found there a disciple named Timothy, who was going to grow and develop to become a leader in the church after Paul's own death. Far from the instability of paganism, the Christian pioneers show a remarkable steadfastness under suffering and consistency in their actions and their message. Paul's words and actions are exactly what Peter and Jesus and even the Old Testament prophets always did and said. His healing of a lame man echoes the Apostle Peter's healing of a lame man in Acts 3 and Jesus' healing of a lame man in Luke 5. Like Peter, when people attempted to worship him, Paul points away from himself and refuses their worship. Far from being on an ego trip like some people say the Apostle Paul was. Like many faithful messengers of God, Paul is violently opposed for his message, just as Jesus Christ was taken out of the city and put to death on a cross. So Paul was stoned and dragged out of the city and left for dead. And where it says in verse 20 that Paul got up, the same Greek word describes Jesus' resurrection. Far from being weak and pathetic, genuine Christianity succeeds with far greater stability than faddish paganism. So let's not be put off when we witness the paganism of the society around us. Paganism is naturally unstable. It's easily whipped up, like the pagans in Lystra, to oppose the Christian message. But we're reminded by this episode in Acts 14 that Christianity is dependable where paganism is ludicrous. Only in Christianity do we get what the pagans in Lystra thought they saw. What did they think they saw? God come down to us in human form. God is bigger than we think. He's bigger than a very big man. He is the creator of all. But we can know him personally and with great assurance, because he came into this world as man, Jesus Christ. Unlike all his messengers who came before him and all who came after him, Jesus Christ never refused anyone's worship. He is God the Son, creator of the whole world, the one to whom every creature on earth owes its worship.